Wherever we look, our world is facing a huge range of unprecedented challenges. So if you're a leader right now, how do you navigate your way through this? How do you make decisions in the teeth of so much uncertainty? How are you going to reconnect your people and rebuild your team so that they're fit to face the future? And what does it even mean to be a leader in such an increasingly challenging world? These and other questions I've been putting to top business leaders from across Europe, and I've had some surprisingly candid responses. So why don't you join me, Nisha Pillay, for the latest episode brought to you by Sherpany of The Agenda. My guest today is convinced that making a decision, any decision, a good decision early beats a perfect decision taken too late. Why is that? Well, let me introduce you now to Professor Dr. Rolf Watter. He is one of Europe's leading M&A practitioners, a partner at the Swiss law firm Behr und Kacher, and has won a garland of awards for his work over the years. He has been chairman of PostFinance, it's a Swiss retail bank, of Siva, a logistics company, and of Nobel Biocare, a dental implant producer, to just mention a few. So let's say a big warm welcome, Rolf. Good to have you with us on The Agenda.
Thank you. Absolutely, thank you. Yeah.
So it seems to be that decision-making is in your DNA, Rolf. It really matters to you. I read somewhere you've been involved in more than 5,000 decisions at board level. Is that so?
Well, that's probably just a back of the envelope calculation. You know, I guess in a normal board, any year you probably take between 50 and 100 decisions. Only 10% of those decisions are either important or controversial, or both of them. Not every decision that is controversial is important, and not every important decision is controversial, but I would say yes.
Okay, so you know what you're talking about when it comes to decisions. So why was it you told me when we last spoke that it's better to take a decision early, even if it's imperfect, rather than waiting to make the perfect decision? What was that about?
You know, I mean, in any decision situation, you basically need to have a set of facts in front of you, which in reality are hardly ever really clear. And in my experience, at least, you know, many people have tendency to say we need more facts, we need to explore this, we need to dig deeper before making a decision. But in my experience, at least, it always has proven better to take a decision, even though the facts or the basis of the decision is not certain. And typically, you know, when you wait a week, two, or even a month or two, until everything is clear, at the best, you know, you might have missed quite a bit in whatever you're doing. And that's why it is really my firm belief that you need to take the risk to take decisions based on uncertain facts, even though that decision might be less perfect than the decision you take 2 or 3 months later based on a much clearer set of, or based on a much clearer analysis.
It sounds like you've been in this situation personally, Rolf. Do you want to tell us a bit more? What might have been the trigger for this kind of feeling of discomfort by the board and in a CEO, even in a slightly unclear situation?
I mean, there are many. Maybe I use the first one, which might sound a bit strange, but might illustrate the point. I recall one situation. I was a board member there. We had a few doubts about the CEO. I specifically recall a board dinner we had with him. He treated the staff very poorly or very arrogantly in a way. And
Where did this happen? The CEO treated the staff badly?
So this was in a restaurant.
Ah, okay. Okay, not in the business context. That's interesting.
No,
okay.
It was a board dinner after a board meeting. And again, it might not be the most perfect example, but still, I think it illustrates the point. That at least in me triggered the question whether he had the right personality, whether he would treat his internal people the same way he did this restaurant staff, and all this came together to form a lot of uneasiness about the CEO. In that situation, we probably, with hindsight, waited too long. I believe enough facts were on the table. We should have taken the decision rather than waiting longer.
That's a very interesting observation. It's difficult as a board member, isn't it, when you've got imperfect knowledge and don't have intimate involvement with the business, to voice your discomfort with maybe some big strategic plan or even a small decision, isn't it? It's difficult to be the dissenting voice.
As a non-executive board member, it often is indeed. The fact that the management, which will typically be supporting the plan, because you typically speak about the plan of management, they of course know 10 times more than you do about the business. And so indeed it is a challenging, and very often you actually risk to make a fool out of yourself as a board member, because you simply do not have the knowledge level that management has. If you want to create a positive feedback type of culture in a board, it's then sometimes preferable if you as a board member, examples you made elsewhere in a totally different industry, in a different environment, and you might then sort of take a position or voice your concern, saying, you know, I might not understand all the details here, but in this business I have seen, you know, with a similar plan went wrong for reasons ABC. Why do you think this is not a problem in your plan? Or at least that's an approach which I have found in the past to work much better than if you take the risk of saying A, B, and C is wrong, because typically management will tell you why you are wrong and ABC are right.
So I'd like to ask you about a real example. You're chairman of the board at SIVA, the Swiss logistics company, which has struggled with profitability and with its basic operations. What has been your role as chair in working with the management to address the underlying issues?
Yeah, I think in every case where profitability is an issue, you at the end, of course, need a plan supported by management, who basically shows you a way to either decrease costs or to increase sales. And the role of a chairman basically is to first work with management on establishing such a plan, pointing out to areas where the plan might not be ambitious enough, and then basically bring this plan together with management to the entire board, where other elements will surface. Maybe one board member has the ability to judge from a customer side where the price increases are possible. Somebody else might have a view on whether cutting down costs and closing down an operation is the right thing to do. So in the board, you then basically need to bring all these views to the table and hopefully redefine this plan or adjust the plan that management has presented, but still in a way which then helps management to implement this plan.
I'd like to move on to talk to you about M&A. After all, that is the area in which you made your name and you've been involved in so many deals. When merging two companies, what is it that makes one deal successful but the other not? Because so many, I think 50% of deals are said to lead to value destruction. What are the necessary ingredients for success?
You probably can distinguish. I mean, there are probably two big problem factors. The one is in choosing the merger partner. That might be a good or a bad decision. You only know afterwards, typically. But at least as important is the implementation phase. In many transactions, many people believe once the transaction is announced, it's over. The reality is that the real work only starts. And it's in that phase that I think most errors are committed.
So give me an example. Has it got anything to do with leadership and culture, the sort of softer side of business?
Yeah, I believe in order to have a good integration, you basically need to make it very clear who is in charge of the combined entity afterwards. I recall a situation where two very strong CEOs have each of them headed a business, and the solution in the merger was to put one as the future chairman and the other one as the CEO, and this clearly did not work out because it was not possible to successfully integrate because company A, who maybe had then the chairman in place, all the employees continued to look towards the chairman. Company B with the CEO, they still continued basically as the CEO told them. So if it's not clear to the entire organization, to the combined organization, on who really is in charge, integration will by necessity almost be delayed.
What do you see as the particular challenges in delivering successful global mergers, Rolf?
You know, I think by far the biggest one is the cultural differences. Cultural differences are by necessity much bigger if you are in a cross-border context than if you are in a national one.
How do people work around that? How do they bring different national cultures together? Some are successful, some are not. What's the secret ingredient?
There are a number of factors. The first one, of course, is whether the two companies involved have also operations in the country of the other one. Then you actually have to find a real integration. That's probably more difficult even. The other situation is where company A purchases company B and has no presence in the country of company B. Then it's more about bringing the systems, all sorts of systems in that company B in line with what company A is doing. So that's much less problematic, but also much less profitable than a merger where you actually integrate the two cultures.
What advice do you give when you're in the heat of a deal? You know, the blood is up, you're in a chase. What advice do you give to the CEOs who are your clients?
Okay, I think one very important thing, which is repeated very often, of course, is you should not fall in love with the target that you see in front of you. Always consider, does it really improve compared to the status quo? Considering all the possible improvements you can make with your own business. That's, I believe, overall the most important advice.
That is fascinating. And do they listen to you?
Certainly not everybody. but I believe the quality of deals overall has improved because everybody, it's the leadership team in each company, but it's also the advisors have become much more aware of the dangers of a merger. And I also believe that the high rate of unsuccessful transactions probably comes down. I mean, we always hear the 50%. I would actually guess that if you do an analysis over the last 5 years, the rate of unsuccessful transaction has decreased.
Let's hope so, Rolf. I want to talk to you about toxic leadership. We still see many narcissists, to be blunt, in positions of power, but we're also seeing a sea change in the way in which employees and stakeholders put up with that. They won't put up with toxic business cultures as they did before. So where do you think that is going? How do you think that's changing the nature of leadership?
I personally believe that a leader acting as part of the team is probably much more important nowadays than this was the case 15 or 20 years ago. And I also believe that it is important, for instance, for a non-executive board to make sure that the CEO does not take all decisions basically by himself, because I always felt it was very, very risky to listen to the CEO alone. That's maybe an important factor because, again, this toxic leadership is a much bigger risk if you have only one person on the other side. If you have 5 or 10, the toxicity, so to speak, is less of an issue because not everybody will be toxic on the in the same area.
That's an interesting point. What are your views on diversity? It's something that increasingly boards and large organizations are under pressure to deliver and reflect on society more widely. Do you think that it improves decision making to have a more diverse composition of boards and senior management?
Yeah, I mean, certainly. I think that's totally undisputable that this leads to better decisions. But it's very important. Diversity is not only gender diversity. Diversity means coming from different cultural backgrounds, different geographical backgrounds, different maybe different interest groups. So you need to have somebody in a board, for instance, who can take the customer's view. You need to have somebody who knows how the supply chain works. You need to have somebody who has a good handle on employee relationships. It's this type of diversity that is very important in my view.
And what's your view on socioeconomic diversity, Holf? Increasingly, we find boards and organizations are becoming more diverse in terms of ethnic, geographical, gender diversity, but they're not really drawing from people beyond that elite talent pool who go to the top universities. Do we need to bring in people who have a different, more gritty perspective on life?
Yeah, I think that's a very, very important question and an interesting topic. My personal experience in this area comes from boards. It has not been easy, my experience, to really bring together the different views in a fruitful manner. That's maybe because people were not accustomed to it yet, because they played only a certain role. And I think that's true for both the board member with the elite school background, but it's also true for maybe the factory worker. It's very hard for for everybody to basically bridge this gap. So my answer to your question would be, yes, probably important, but very, very difficult to achieve. And I think there's a very, very far way to go.
Interesting. Rolf, our podcast series is all about leaders on leadership. Is there a final thought that you want to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, let me maybe finish by giving advice to younger colleagues who would like to do similar things in their life. I believe in order to be a good leader, it's incredibly important to have as broad a background and as broad an experience base as you possibly can. So in my view, the most important thing to do is being as broad as possible. That was easy for me being a lawyer, because you see many situations automatically depending on your client base. But it's also important if you're in business, do not stay in one place, do many, many different things, do sports, play music. That's as important as spending 20 hours a day in the office.
It's been a pleasure having you with us on The Agenda. Thank you so much.
Well, great speaking to you. Thank you very much also. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.